We have already noted that the most frequent treatment for infertility in the developed world is presently in vitro fertilization. Given that the Catholic Church has expressed its consistent opposition to the use of this technique, it's important for us to familiarize ourselves with it and also to be aware of the extent to which it is widespread and to which aspects of what the Church objects to are frequently obscured or even hidden by those who promote this practice. I have provided for this section of the course one chapter each in two standard textbooks that are used to train obstetricians and gynecologists. The first is Gabby's Obstetrics, Normal, and Problem Pregnancies, the sixth edition from 2012, and then Lentz's Comprehensive Gynecology, the sixth edition. As I mentioned, I've provided chapters from each of these texts, which are not required but can be regarded as extra reading, which will enable you, if you wish, to look at how these various subjects that we'll be discussing are referred to and recommended in the standard texts used to train healthcare providers at the present time. You'll also find that occasionally throughout this section of the course, I'll be citing these two chapters. But again, you have access to the originals if you wish to look at them in detail. And in this first section of the portion of our discussion of in vitro fertilization, number one, the biology and technology, what I'd like you to do is to go on what you might call an internet field trip at this point. I've given you the website address of the Advanced Fertility Center of Chicago. If you have never visited a commercial website devoted to fertility and to the promotion of in vitro fertilization, I believe you will find this quite an eye-opening experience. Please go ahead and click on that link, and while you're on that site, notice in particular, as I've suggested, the section on costs and the various packages that are available at different cost. This may remind you of the kind of financing for a used car that you might have found made available to you if you've ever had occasion to buy one. And also note, as you look at this site, the extent to which risks and side effects of treatment are either mentioned or not mentioned at all. Try searching for GIFT on the site, the one procedure which some Catholic theologians may be permissible. Notice how vigorously it is discouraged. And some of the reasons for this we've already mentioned, namely the statistics of the center. And notice in particular, if you can navigate to that particular section, how they are soliciting, that is, encouraging people to donate eggs so that they have available eggs from people of various ethnic backgrounds to choose from. So once you've done that, you can come back to the webpage on our discussion of in vitro fertilization and continue with this lecture. Now, I presume that you've had the opportunity to visit the Advanced Fertility Center site and that you have reflected on what you've seen. Let's now drop down to number 1.1 and we'll look at the actual biology and technique of in vitro fertilization. Number 1.1, retrieving oocytes after ovarian stimulation. This stimulation is hormonal. We don't need to go into all the details of the various hormones or gonadotropins, that is, the hormones that stimulate the production of, and in some cases substitute for, the hormones that are naturally produced by the body. This is done in a series of cycles, and the result, as you can see on the left-hand picture, is an enlarged and rather knobby-looking ovary, which reflects the fact that the ovary has been hyperstimulated and that multiple follicles have become enlarged. This, of course, is abnormal. Ordinarily, it's only one follicle on one side or the other that is stimulated by the normal hormonal cycle of the woman. But once this hyperstimulation has been induced, then an ultrasound probe can be introduced into the woman's vagina, and a needle aspiration can be performed through the vaginal wall, and the egg cells or oocytes can be removed. This is done, and there are two different pictures or images of this. If you drop down, there's an artist rendition of number 1.1.3 of the aspiration, that is the piercing of a follicle with a needle in order to withdraw the oocyte. Now, it needs to be emphasized that multiple egg cells are removed, as many as possibly can be removed, because multiple egg cells will be fertilized in this process. Number 1.2, fertilization, is accomplished in a couple of different ways. The first is simple mixing of the spermatozoa, which are obtained through masturbation of the prospective father, and then mixed with the harvested egg cells. And again, I need to stress that multiple eggs are fertilized. But this is not the only way in which fertilization can take place. There is also a technique illustrated in the blue picture, number 1.2.2, called intracytoplasmic sperm injection, which is the taking of a spermatozoa and deliberately injecting it into the egg cell. Now, this is quite abnormal. It does not happen in nature. Ordinarily, there are a variety of factors, many of which are still unknown, that permits one and only one spermatozoan to enter into the egg. This effectively forces the issue, and we'll come back to this. Some people are concerned that although this increases the statistical likelihood of fertilization for the company that is engaging in this process, the fertility clinic, it also introduces into the egg spermatozoa that have not, as it were, proved themselves, and it may be that nature naturally selects out some sperm cells which are not otherwise able to enter. However, this process simply avoids that selection entirely. If we drop down to number 1.3, then for several days, the fertilized ova, now zygotes, are incubated, and I've illustrated the development of the incubated zygote up to the blastocyst stage in number 1.3.2, and I should emphasize that these are not pictures of a human egg cell or blastocyst. I have moral reservations about using those kinds of pictures. These are bovine. These are taken from a cow. Nevertheless, the appearance is pretty much the same. The whole point of this is to point out that clinics will transfer the embryo at different points, at different stages, sometimes at the blastocyst stage number 8, sometimes earlier on, just after there have been several cell divisions. Now, of course, once multiple cells are present, a cell can be removed and tested genetically, so the couple that is having in vitro fertilization can engage in selection against a variety of things and for a variety of things, and this is very commonly done. I might also ask you to hold in your mind an image of number 8 of the blastocyst stage, since when we talk about stem cell research involving embryonic stem cells, this is the, as it were, prized desiderata of the embryonic stem cell researchers. They want a human blastocyst, which can then be dissected so that the various cells present, particularly as you see here in the reddish portion of that blastocyst, can be used for experimentation. And if you drop down now to number 1.4, the last step, embryo transfer, which is the transfer of the embryo that has been developed now for a variable number of days into the woman's uterus. Of course, this is timed to do it at approximately the time when implantation would normally take place, but as the large and hyperstimulated ovaries indicate, the woman has not undergone a normal cycle. It's been a cycle that was artificially created using endogenous hormones, and thus the results are likely to be better if one waits for a more normal cycle. And here I need to stress again that the transfer is not of an embryo, but of multiple embryos to the woman's uterus. The desire of fertility clinics is to have the best possible statistics so that when they are compared with one another, it can be said that they achieve pregnancy in a small number of attempts. And the likelihood of this is increased by transferring multiple embryos. The number of embryos that are transferred depends on the woman's age, as we shall see. But, of course, this creates the terrible complication of multiple gestation, that if all the embryos develop, the woman will find herself pregnant with twins or triplets or even more, and then face very terrible recommendations from her gynecologist, which we'll discuss shortly. If we now move down to the section on the Catholic Magisterium on in vitro fertilization, one can summarize that the Church has been consistently and unremittingly opposed to this practice since it was first proposed, and this is for a variety of reasons which we shall see. Beginning in 1987, the document Donum Vitae from the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith noted in particular that the voluntary destruction of human embryos is often associated associated with in vitro fertilization. One can say now that it is virtually always associated with in vitro fertilization, with very, very few exceptions, since the practice of transferring a single embryo is generally somewhat rare, and also it's almost unknown that a clinic would not fertilize multiple embryos and then freeze the ones that were not being used against future cycles of embryo transfer in the event that the woman did not become pregnant, and also against the possibility that the couple might want to have the woman become pregnant again in future. So this is the one and very vivid reason for the Church's opposition, that there is a very strong relationship between in vitro fertilization and the voluntary destruction and or freezing of human embryos. Notice that I've highlighted in white with the black text that emphasizes again the problem of the domination of nature that underlies the whole process. And it's part of the reason why at the very beginning of this webpage I had a picture of Wagner, the assistant to Faust in Goethe's play or poem Faust, who is in that picture creating the so-called homunculus. This is a myth from human literature and human fantasy about the possibility of a human being creating another miniature human being in a jar as a kind of experiment in witchcraft or science, depending on how you want to view it. This has been a recurrent theme in literature and represents the kind of ultimate domination over nature of which human beings might be possible. In vitro fertilization, in some ways, is an example of this. And notice that the text mentions that effectively life and death become subjected to the decision of man, who thus sets himself up as the giver of life and death by decree. Notice, highlighted in red, the abortion mentality, which has made this procedure possible, leads, whether one wants it or not, to man's domination over life and death of his fellow human beings, and can lead to a system of radical eugenics. And again, this is a significant part of what is done in most in vitro fertilization clinics. There is the possibility of, and it is rather widespread, of selecting for characteristics, and this is inevitably a form of eugenics. However, the Church's opposition is not based solely on the tragedy of the destruction of embryos in vitro fertilization, but also, as in section 2b5, which is highlighted in yellow, such fertilization is in itself illicit, intrinsecus illicita, and in opposition to the dignity of procreation and of the conjugational union, a conjugal union, even when everything is done to avoid the death of the human embryo. So even if it were possible to fertilize only one embryo and to transfer that one embryo, the process would still be intrinsically illicit, that is, immoral, because it involves a separation of the act of bringing new life into the world from conjugal union. It involves the disruption of these two interrelated aspects of human sexuality. There is then a section highlighted in white in which it's noted that this process is being used as a means of obtaining embryos for the purpose of research, and that effectively thus the researcher usurps the place of God, sets themselves up as the master of the destiny of others. And again, the concern about domination of technology over the origin and destiny of the human person is again reiterated in section 2b5. And here the nuance is mentioned that this relationship of domination is contrary to what that should exist between parents and their children, contrary to the dignity and equality that must be common to parents and children. So in IVF, the parents have set themselves up in a position of domination and manipulation of their children, which is inimical to the notion of what a wholesome family should be. And again, the objection that such fertilization is neither achieved nor positively willed is the expression and fruit of a specific act of the conjugal union. This is the reason why it is intrinsically wrong, whether or not it results in the creation of extra embryos. And then highlighted at the end of this section, or this selection from Donum Vitae, the portion in black type, that The idea of being cooperators with God for giving life to a new person is precisely what is absent, in the sense that the individual is not the result and fruit of a conjugal act. Then, in 2008, in section 2.2, the same congregation, in the instruction Dignitas Personae, reiterated its previous condemnations. If you notice in number 14, all techniques of in vitro fertilization act as if the human embryo were a mass of cells to be used, selected, and discarded. That is another aspect of the wrongness of the procedure. Reiteration in number 15 of the number of embryos that is sacrificed is extremely high. And this is not just incidental. It's pointed out here that destruction and loss of embryos is foreseen and willed. So one can't argue that it's simply a side effect. It is foreseen and it is intended by those who engage in this procedure. Human beings, that is, embryos, are treated in a purely utilitarian manner. And in number 16, there's mention of what we shall come to a little bit later in this section, the blithe acceptance of the enormous number of abortions involved in the process of in vitro fertilization, specifically involving the destruction of embryos that are conceived in the context of multiple gestations. When a woman discovers that she has triplets or quadruplets and is told by her gynecologist obstetrician that she now must abort several of these embryos so that both she and they can avoid the side effects of multiple gestations. Suddenly you have this moral dilemma, this horrific moral dilemma that can arise in the context of couples who simply want to have children. And notice also in number 17, intracytoplasmic sperm injection is also morally illicit insofar as it too creates a separation between procreation and the conjugal act. So this is quite apart from the possibility that ICSI might also be linked to an increase in birth defects and represent a significant and problematic effect of the whole process. And then just as a review, if you've moved down to the next section, number 2.3, these condemnations, these descriptions of the moral dangers involved in in vitro fertilization and intracytoplasmic sperm injection, all of these are what you might call fulfillments of the warnings and concerns that we saw expressed in Humanae Vitae, this section we've talked about before, a warning about controlling the forces of nature and rationally organizing them, which unfortunately becomes a kind of domination, and one needs to recognize that there are limits to the powers which God has given us over our bodies and to which technology should be applied. The terrible and misguided irony is that the real mastery that is required, as we've mentioned before, is not domination of nature, but in fact mastery of one's own desires, an attempt to discover what is in fact good and to master one's tendency to dominate in a ruthless and destructive way the powers and gifts that one has been blessed with by God. And then in 2.4 and 2.5, concerns expressed by Blessed Pope John Paul II, the first in the theology of the body, that this domination of the forces of nature ultimately makes ourselves an object of manipulation. Rather than a proper balanced control for virtue's sake, one becomes a manipulator and controller and dominator of oneself in a dark and destructive way. And then in 2.5, a reminder from Evangelium Vitae, that when it comes to the natural world, we're subject not only to biological laws, but also to moral ones, which cannot be violated with impunity. And I might add here my own concern, which I will express again, that one of the terrible aspects of in vitro fertilization is that it has created a mentality in which this kind of manipulation is normal, and couples who otherwise do not understand the technology involved or the moral issues involved simply place themselves under the care of obstetrician gynecologists who tell them that this is the proper way to treat infertility, and then suddenly a couple finds themselves in the horrific moral circumstance of being told, well, now you have to decide to abort several of these multiple embryos which you are carrying. The devastating moral consequences of this for couples cannot be overstated or overimagined. And in my opinion, this is a reminder of how really destructive and problematic this process and the mindset that lies behind it is, and that it is truly in the dark and bitter fruit of these horrible moral choices that couples then are forced to make, that one can see the, if I may be permitted to use a strong word, poisoned nature of this root, this extremely widespread and widely rooted practice. If we now move down to complications and side effects of in vitro fertilization, as I've stated in the text on this webpage, this subject is extremely controversial and fraught. It is amazing how the same studies can be quoted by both the defenders of in vitro fertilization and those who wish to point out its limitations and problematic nature. Different aspects of the same studies are quoted, and it becomes very bewildering to folks to sort out how they're supposed to interpret this information. And in section 4, I've given you a couple of examples of summaries or abstracts of recent articles that do demonstrate an increased likelihood of birth defects in regard to in vitro fertilization, but which have been attacked, assailed, and considered irrelevant by many of the supporters of this practice. But let's begin with and focus on some of the indisputable complications and side effects. The first, ovarian hyperstimulation syndrome. And at the end of this section 3.1, you'll see that there is a link to a New York Times article on ovarian hyperstimulation. This is also available if you wish to download it from the course website. It's available there as well. This is a recognized side effect, and I've quoted Lentz's Comprehensive Gynecology here in support of, or actually in description of this syndrome. The large text is my own, and then the smaller text are citations from Lentz. The drugs that are used to induce the multiple simultaneous ovulations, which are a necessary precursor to harvesting these eggs, can cause, in a certain number of individuals, an ovarian hyperstimulation syndrome, which it can be very dangerous. Notice that in Lentz's text, he says that it can be life-threatening, it can cause massive fluid shifts, ascites, which is a presence of large amounts of fluid in the abdomen, pleural effusion, which is fluid in the thorax, that is, in the chest cavity. It can cause disruptions in the electrolytes, that is, the balance of the minerals that exist within the various fluids of the body, and thromboembolism, which is to say blood clots. So this is a very severe and dangerous syndrome, which occurs in 0.5% of women who receive gonadotropins, who receive the drugs that are used to induce hyperstimulated ovulation. Recent articles, as I've noted, claim that if you use lower doses of drugs, this complication can be avoided. However, the effect of this is that one has fewer eggs, and therefore clinics are less willing to use the lower drug regimens in order to avoid the necessity of going back several times for several cycles in order to harvest what they regard as enough eggs for their in vitro process. And I've included, as I mentioned, an article on ovarian hyperstimulation, which was published in the New York Times, which you are welcome to look at. I would encourage you to do so. This represents reports in the lay press of some of the side effects of this treatment. However, you might note that the individual reported that she was undergoing in vitro fertilization and that this was the first step in it, but this would apply to any procedure that involves use of hormones for hyperstimulation of the ovaries. In section 3.2, birth defects. Enough studies have come out that it's hard to dispute that there is an increase in birth defects associated with in vitro fertilization. When this is pointed out in the lay press, the defenders of this practice immediately respond that that was in olden times, that techniques have improved, and that the older statistics are no longer significant. I have mentioned that at the end of this webpage, there are two abstracts from recent articles on this issue. The question whether this is because of the technique of IVF, that is the fact that fertilization takes place outside of the body in a completely unnatural context, or whether the birth defects are primarily due to the fact that quite a number of the women who are asking for in vitro fertilization are of advanced maternal age, and this is associated with an increased risk. And also that many of these women find themselves carrying multiple gestations. They find themselves carrying multiple infants, and this too is associated with an increased risk of defects. These factors remain hard to completely separate from one another, but it's fairly undeniable that there are some there is some increase in birth defects associated with in vitro fertilization. And number 3.3, a point that we'll be coming back to again in a little more detail. It's undeniable that multiple gestations is a frequent problem in vitro fertilization, and I've quoted Gabby's obstetrics as a reminder of the fact that this increases the risk both to mother and to child. But unfortunately, the approach of the clinics that blithely transfer large numbers of embryos in order to improve the likelihood of pregnancy, the response is simply, as we'll see, reduction, by which they mean abortion of the extra embryos. And finally, for you to glance at, these are not required reading because they are in technical medical language, but section 4 gives you a representative example, two examples of recent articles describing the association of birth defects and in vitro fertilizations. Again, a very controversial subject, and the implications of which are very often denied by the supporters of this practice.